so Romans chapter 1, let me just, you know, dispel any
preaching in the latter half of the chapter. Pride Month is next month, so we'll get that off our chest then, you know, and that way any of the atheists on Twitter that are watching, you know, tune in next month. That way you can get your material for your feed next month. But anyway, what I'm actually preaching about is a real practical sermon on soul winning. I want to preach a two-part sermon tonight, this morning, and this evening on how to go soul winning. And this is an important thing to cover, obviously, because of the fact that, you know, we as a soul winning church do a lot of soul winning, you know, and you might be sitting there and thinking, well, I already do a lot of soul winning. I already know how to go soul winning. You know, don't tune this out. You know, there's still a lot of practical things you can learn from this. You know, one of the pivotal moments in my, you know, I don't want to say career, but my role as a soul winner, whatever you want to call it, was when I heard, a couple of sermons on soul winning, and I was somebody who'd already been soul winning for years, and I kind of said, well, you know what, I'm just going to listen to these and just kind of go back to the basics and learn something from it. And that was something that actually really helped me, was when I even later into my time having already been a soul winner, hearing a sermon like this and applying it. It really took my soul winning to another level, because I think sometimes those of us that are already kind of soul winning, we kind of get this idea that we've got it all figured out. We kind of gotten into our ways, and we can kind of develop blind spots and kind of get to a place where we don't see, you know, where areas that we could improve. Okay, so that's one point. And then obviously, if you're somebody who doesn't go soul winning, you know, and wants to go soul winning, this is going to be very helpful to you. And this is something that, you know, that will help you be prepared to go soul winning. And that's really, you know, my first point this morning is that to learn how to go soul winning, you know, you have to prepare to do it. That's why I'm preaching this. You know, I considered maybe just doing like a whole Saturday, seminar and have everybody show up and feed everybody. But really, I think these are things, and I'm not against that. Maybe that's something I'll do in the future. But I think this is something that we kind of need to address now, just because of the fact that, you know, it's great that we have a lot of people showing up to our soul winning times. But what I've noticed is that we're almost at like a 50-50 split when it comes to people who are talkers at the door, who know how to give the gospel, and those that are silent partners. And look, I'm not against silent partners. I'm very grateful for silent partners. But as silent partners, we should always be desiring to get to the place where we're preaching the gospel. That should be, you know, our motive, not to just stay a silent partner. And look, if there's people out there that want to stay a silent partner for the rest of their life, God bless you. I'm not against you. Keep coming, and I'm not trying to put pressure on the people to start speaking sooner than they're ready to do so. But, you know, I don't know that I've ever met anybody who's best fit to just remain a silent partner. In all the people that I've ever gone soul winning with, you know, I've never met a person who they're probably just better off staying a silent partner and not speaking. You know, everybody has, I don't want to get ahead of myself too much, but everybody has the ability and can be used of God to preach the gospel. And, you know, and I'm going to kind of clarify some things, because, you know, even as somebody who teaches how to go soul winning and preaches about it, you know, my philosophy about some things has changed over the last couple of years. I've preached previous sermons where I really emphasize some things that I think now are not as important, aren't really things that we need to focus on. So, you know, again, if you're somebody who already goes soul winning and it's kind of taken heed to those other sermons, listen up, because, you know, I've changed some things, and you know what? Things might change in the future, all right? I'm fluid here, all right? So, but I'm learning right along with you. Now, notice there in Romans chapter 1, it says, verse 13, "Now I would not have you ignorant, brethren, that oftentimes I purposed to come unto you, but was let hitherto." So again, you can see that Paul was somebody who prepared, who purposed, who planned, right? He purposed to come unto them. You know, he wasn't just kind of living his life flippantly. He had a mission. He had something that he was trying to achieve. You know, he was somebody who planned. He was somebody who prepared. He was somebody who purposed. He says that, it goes on and says, "that I might have some fruit among you also, even as among other Gentiles. I am debtor both to the Greeks and to the barbarians, both to the wise and to the unwise." Verse 15, "so as much as in me is, I am ready to preach the gospel." He's saying, look, I'm prepared to preach the gospel. I purposed to come unto you. I wanted to have fruit. You know, if I'd gotten there, you know, I was ready to preach the gospel to the Jews, to the Greeks, to the barbarians. I'm indebted to all of them. I'm ready to preach the gospel to anybody, everybody, at any point, anywhere, at any time. That's what Paul was. He was prepared to preach the gospel. And that's why I'm preaching this sermon, because people need, if you're going to get to the place where you're going to go from silent partner to speaker, or you're going to go from non-soul winner to silent partner, or wherever you are, if you're going to get to that next level where you need to be, or you're going to improve as somebody who's already speaking at the door and preaching the gospel, you're not going to get there just by accident. You're going to have to actually purpose to do that. You're going to have to take the time to plan and to prepare to be ready to preach the gospel. That's what Paul was. He was somebody who was ready to preach the gospel. He went on and said in verse 16, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first and also to the Greek." So again, the point is that he needs to learn that we need to be ready to preach the gospel. We need to get to that place either where we're improving or taking that first step towards being somebody who is ready to preach the gospel. There's that famous saying, and I think I got it right, if failure to prepare is preparing to fail. Failure to prepare is preparing to fail, or maybe you'd use planning. Failing to plan is planning to fail. You know, if you don't sit down and purpose some things in your life, they're not going to get accomplished. You're going to fail in that area. I mean, think about that in any other area of life. You know, if you're somebody who, you know, is trying to excel at the job, you know, develop skills, you have to actually take the time out of your schedule to do that. You know, if you're going to be somebody that reads the Bible, you know, you're going to have to actually plan to read the Bible. I could go on and on. It's true in any other area of life. You know, we don't just do things by accident. We sit down and we think about it and we have intention and then we go out and we do it. So why would it be any different when it comes to preaching the gospel, which is something, you know, and I don't want to turn this into a motivational to get you to go soul winning type of sermon. I preach about that plenty, I feel like, in my other preaching all of the time. I think that's a nail that I hit quite often in this church. And so, you know, I don't want to go there. But what I do want you to understand this morning is that you need to prepare. You need to plan if you're going to be somebody who's going to preach the gospel. Now, if you would, go over to, well, let's just go over to Proverbs chapter 11. Proverbs chapter 11. And again, this is going to be a two-part sermon, okay? And this morning, really, I just want to deal with some of the practical matters of soul winning. You know, and you say, well, and if you're somebody who can't make it back tonight, or if you're, you know, somebody, if you can't make the service tonight, you know, I think, I don't know if you know this, but we have a YouTube channel where all the sermon that's live streaming right now, it'll live stream tonight, it'll be ready for you to watch. You know, hopefully, you know, it's kind of a side note, hopefully if you're a member of this church, you're keeping up with the preaching that's here. You know, I'm not against people listening to other preachers. I'm glad people listen to other preachers. I listen to other people that preach. I listen to other preachers. But, you know, I don't listen to any other preachers until I listen to my pastor preach. You know, I listen to Pastor Anderson's. I get caught up on the sermons that I need to hear because, you know, why do I do that? Because he's my pastor. Because, you know, he's the one that kind of has his finger on the pulse of the church that I attend. You know, so I'm not against listening to other preachers, but, you know, if you're listening to all the other preachers and not catching up on the preaching that's taking place from this pulpit, you know, I'd recommend that you adjust that, that you put that priority here, because here's the thing. All those other preachers are preaching great things that are going to help you, but do they have the finger on the pulse? Do they know you? Do they know where you're at? Do they know where this church is at? Are they preaching things that are, you know, believe it or not, I sit down and think about what do the people at this church need to hear? Okay, so, you know, get caught up on that. That part two will be out tonight, you know, and it's, you know, as well as all the other preaching that we do here. But again, failure to prepare is preparing to fail. If you're going to be somebody who preaches the gospel, you have to plan it. That's why I'm, you know, preaching this, is so that you can get prepared. The Bible says in Proverbs chapter 11, look at verse 30, it says, "The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and he that winneth souls is wise." You know, he is wise, meaning, you know, he has wisdom, he has knowledge, he has discernment. You know, it's not just that, oh, it's a smart thing for you to go soul winning. Obviously it is. But, you know, what I get from that is that the person who goes out and, you know, and bears fruit, who goes out and wins souls, it's because that person has wisdom. It's not the soul winning that makes them wise, okay, although soul winning can do that. But he that wins souls, he that is successful in his soul winning is somebody that has wisdom. You know, and we don't just get wisdom by accident. You know, medical doctors don't just, you know, pay a bunch of tuition and not study to become doctors. You know, they spend hours studying and reading and memorizing. You know, as true as of any, you know, professional career like that. People prepare to be successful at what they do. They gain wisdom, and that makes them successful. You know, if you're going to be a fruitful soul winner, if you're going to bear fruit as a Christian, you know, you're going to have to win souls. In order to win souls, you must go with wisdom. You must have knowledge and understanding. Keep something in Proverbs. Go to Ecclesiastes chapter number 10. Ecclesiastes chapter number 10. You know, we need to have wisdom when we go. We need to, you know, listen up to the sermon this morning. We need to plan. We need to prepare. We need to take these points to heart if we're somebody that wants to become a soul winner or improve our own soul winning. It's something that you have to gain wisdom in. It's not just going to happen in and of itself. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verse 10. It says, if the iron be blunt and he do not whet the edge, you know, like in wet, like you've heard of a whetstone. That's how they would sharpen these things. You know, if he does not sharpen the edge on a whetstone, if he do not whet the edge, then he must put to more strength. So look, if a guy goes out with a dull axe and is trying to cut down a tree, you know, he's making things harder for himself by not sitting down and taking the time and learning how to hold an angle on a grindstone, you know, the different grits that he needs to use and actually take the time to develop the skill on how to, you know, create a sharp edge on his axe. He's saying, look, if you take the time to prepare, the job that you're going to go do is going to be easier. You know, and you can apply that to winning souls. You know, we could go out there and try to win souls and make it a very laborious, very difficult, very strenuous thing where we're just really struggling to get it done. Or, you know, we could listen to a sermon like this. We could, you know, take these practical tips to heart and prepare and study that we need to do this preparation study that we need to do so that when we go out there soul winning, you know what, we're swinging a sharp axe. And it's not going to be difficult. It's going to be something that we can do with joy. It's going to be something that's a pleasure to us and not just this chore that we have to check off our to-do list or something like that. That's why he said, and I'll remind you again from Romans 1, he said, I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation. You know, if we learn how to preach the gospel, God, you know, sharpen that axe, that spiritual axe. If we take the sharp two-edged sword of God's word and we, you know, learn how to swing this thing with knowledge and discernment, you know, we're going to be much more effective as soul winners. If we're somebody who knows how to, wet the edge, so to speak, spiritually. The Bible says there in Ecclesiastes 10, if the iron be blunt and you not wet the edge, then you must put more strength. But wisdom is profitable to direct. You know, the wisdom, the knowledge, the understanding that you can get is going to be, that's going to be what sharpens that blade for you. And again, you can apply this to any area of life. We're talking about soul winning this morning. So let me just get into some practical tips this morning about soul winning. And if you would, keep something in Proverbs, but go over to 1 Thessalonians 2. I'll end up there eventually. Go to 1 Thessalonians 2, keeping something in Proverbs. The first point I want to make this morning about learning how to go soul winning is to pick a time and go. Look, if you don't get anything else from the sermon this morning, get that. Because here's how you learn to do anything in life, by doing it. You know, we could take you and we could sit you down and show you a book on how to drive a car. If you've never driven a car, you know, let's say you've never learned how to drive a clutch, which is probably, you know, more and more people these days. You know, it's the millennial anti-theft device is a clutch because they don't know how to operate a clutch, right? And look, I've learned how to operate a clutch. It's been a while, you know, but I've also taught others how to, you know, operate a clutch. And I remember when I learned, you know, I thought I knew how to do it, and it's kind of a long but humorous story. You know, I remember one day I just hopped in the truck, my dad's truck. It wasn't even my own truck. It was a big truck, and it was a clutch, and I just thought, I got this. And I stayed in second gear, you know, the whole way out and the whole way back. And I'm, like, on the side of the road, and people are passing me. And, you know, I'll tell you more about it later, right? But then I came home and I told my dad what had happened, and he said, oh, well, you wanted to learn how to drive the clutch. And he didn't say, well, here, you know, he could have stood there and talked to me about how you got to feather it in, how it's a 2-foot operation, and you got to get the RPMs up to a certain, you know, degree or to a certain amount, and then you have to, you know, engage the clutch gently. He could have sat there and described to me in great detail how to operate a clutch. But what he actually did was put me in the passenger seat and got in the driver's seat, and he had a stone driveway with, you know, like a pea stone gravel all up and down, and it was a steep driveway. It wasn't that steep, but it had an incline where the vehicle would roll. And he said, this is what you got to learn to do. And he was showing me how you could catch, you know, the vehicle with the clutch, keep it from rolling back, because that's a very important skill if you ever learn how to drive, you know, stick shift. You know, and he said, when you can do that and not make ruts in my driveway and spit gravel over the place, he said, you can drive the car. And that's, you know, that's how I learned, you know, was doing that. And that's a great illustration. You know, later I learned how to drive a double clutch when I was getting a Class A commercial driver's license. But you know how I learned doing it? It wasn't just, obviously there was the written portion of the exam that you had to pass for the state, but you also had to take a road test. You know, and the company that I work for, you know, they had a big property, and they would say, hey, you know, here's some cones. Go out there, here's a vehicle, and just take the entire day, you know, because we want you to get this license, and just take as much time as you need to learn how to operate a double clutch and learn how to operate, you know, a Class A vehicle. You know, and I could have read and studied all that stuff, but until I actually got out there and put my foot, you know, on the gas and my other foot on the clutch, grabbed the stick shift, got behind the wheel, you know, I never would have learned how to drive that. And I wouldn't have this illustration today. It's the same thing with soul winning. You know, you can sit there and listen to all the sermons. You can go through all the preaching that's been done on soul winning and take all the notes you want. But until you actually determine, hey, I'm going to show up at a soul winning time and go out there and see how it's done and be a silent partner, you know, then you're not going to succeed. The Bible says in Proverbs 18, verse 1, through desire, a man having separated himself seeketh and intermeddleth with all wisdom. You know, and I preached on this recently, but it's through desire. You know, you separate unto this wisdom. You intermeddle with it. You say, hey, I want to get wise in this area of soul winning. I want to be, you know, somebody that is wise. I want to win souls. Well, you know what? You're going to have to separate some time for soul winning. And, you know, we have a schedule. You saw it there in the bulletin this morning. That's available, and if there's a time you say, well, that doesn't work for me, you know, come talk to me. I'll make time for you. I'll teach you. It's an investment in eternity for me to stop what I'm doing and help you to learn how to preach the gospel. I'd be more than happy to do that for anybody in this church. But again, that's the first point, how to learn to go soul winning. How to go soul winning? Well, you need to go. Bottom line. You know, if you don't get anything else, get that. Pick a soul winning time and stay committed. Stay committed to that soul winning time. And I understand things come up and stuff like that, but you know, you need to stay committed to going out on a regular basis and learning how to go soul winning and keep it in front of you, you know. Otherwise, it just becomes this pipe dream. Otherwise, it just becomes this something that you're just going to do someday in the future. And we all have goals like that. We all have, you know, things that we want to accomplish that we're going to get to someday. We all have that, you know, hobby that we're going to get to, that skill we're going to learn when it's more convenient. You know, don't put soul winning on that list. You know, put soul winning make it a priority in your life. Pick a time and go. You know, and when you go, start, obviously you're going to start as a silent partner. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, everyone starts out as a silent partner. I started out as a silent partner. You know, anybody who's going to be a good soul winner, in my opinion, starts out as a silent partner. It's typically the people that have not done much soul winning. I mean, we've had people come to the church, move to the church, multiple people, okay? I'm not trying to pick on any one person. We've had multiple people come to church and just say, oh yeah, I already know how to go soul winning. And they've done a little bit of, you know, they watched a few videos online and they've done a little bit. And God bless them for their effort. You know, I appreciate where their heart's at. But you know, when you're in a soul winning church that's filled with seasoned soul winners, that's probably a good time to just be a silent partner and learn from people that have already done it. And typically the people that start out at silent partner, they are the better... I don't say they're better soul winners in the long run, but the people that just are right out of the gate, who have done very little soul winning, insist on not being silent partners, are typically the ones that I know to struggle more and have more problems when it comes to soul winning. So start out as a silent partner. I think it's great. I think that's a great place to start, and there's nothing wrong with that. But you know, if you're going to be a silent partner, let me just give you a few tips. Okay, and I understand this is a very practical sermon this morning. Maybe this is the most exciting thing for you to hear, but you know, this is something that we need to preach. This is something that people need to put, you know, into practice in their life. And emphasis, first of all, for the silent partners on silence. If you're going to be a silent partner, be silent. I'm not saying you can't say anything the whole time, but you know, when the talker is at the door, talking to the person at the door, that's, you know, don't chirp up. Or, you know, even if they're preaching the gospel, that's not the time to say amen. You know, just be quiet emphasis on silent, and what you should be doing is taking mental notes, you know, learning, noticing how they're saying, where they're going, taking note of the scriptures, you know. And I'm going to get into the scriptures tonight. I'm going to get into the gospel more thoroughly tonight. These are very practical tips that people need to learn. You know, take notes, you know, and once you kind of learn the gospel, once you kind of got the, you know, you have an idea how to preach it, you know, that's the time to practice. And this can be kind of awkward, but think about how people practice things all the time so that when it's time to perform, they're good at it. I mean, think about the instrumentation here. Think about any musician. You know, I doubt, you know, the piano players and the violin players, this was, you know, they hadn't touched an instrument all week until today. And then they're going to go home, you know, and they're not going to play again until the next church service. I'd highly doubt that. There's many, many hours that have gone into, you know, practicing, learning, playing scales, tuning the instrument, learning how to operate, you know, fingerings, all that stuff that goes into it. Why would it be any different with soul winning? You know, we can't just expect to show up once a week or whatever it is and listen to somebody give the gospel, you know, if we happen to be in a receptive community, hear the gospel given once or twice and think, oh, I got it. I'm ready to go. No, you're it's going to take more than that. You know, it's going to take note. You have to learn how to take some notes, maybe. Notice what's being said and practice. You know, and honestly, do that. If you got to do it with someone at home, if you got to do it, you know, in front of a mirror, I would practice it, honestly. Now, to everybody that is not a silent partner, you know, don't put pressure on silent partners. I think sometimes people are reluctant to go soul winning because they feel like they're going to get thrust into this uncomfortable situation. It's going to be uncomfortable, okay? You might as well just get over that now. If you're going to be somebody who's going to eventually be a talker, you're going to give the gospel, you're going to have to go through that season of discomfort where you're, you know, but I think we kind of blow it out of proportion in our own minds, like what's taking place. I mean, I have to confront somebody about their eternal soul. It's like, I know that's what's taking place, but it's really, you know, it's really more down to earth. You know, we're inviting people to church. There's a gentle way to lead into that, okay? So don't be overwhelmed by that, and let's not pressure silent partners. Take all the time you need. And again, there's nothing wrong with silent partners because of the fact that just being a silent partner increases our numbers. You know, if we have two talkers, you know, and it's just, you know, one team, both people are talkers that are going out every Sunday, you know, that's just one team. You know, that's that, you know, they go out for 1 hour, that's one man hour, right? If they're alternating doors, because it's one team. You know, two people make up one team. That's, you know, I understand it's more man hours, but really when you think about it, it's they're operating as one unit. So it's like an hour of soul winning that's getting done by two people. But if just two more silent partners show up, then we just doubled our efforts. So you can see the value in the silent partner. So don't think that, oh, I'm not going to go because I don't know how to, you know, I don't know how to give the gospel. I'll go when I'm ready to give the gospel. One, you won't learn how to give the gospel by not going. That's my first point. That's the most important thing you can do is just to go. That will help you more than anything else. And two, just by showing up as a silent partner, you know, you've already, you know, increased our ability to go out and reach more people with the gospel, which is the point to begin with. I had you go to 1 Thessalonians, right? So don't think that we are, you know, there's any shame in being a silent partner, that it's not worth it. You know, it's where you start, and it's going to help us, you know, reach more people. Now, let me get down to some more practical matters. What happens when you're at the door, making that first impression, okay? And again, this is kind of where I've changed a little bit on some of my philosophy and how I approach things. And, you know, let me, I'm not trying to underemphasize the fact that first impressions matter. You know, when you go to a door, people are instantly making, at first glance, they're making assessments about you, they're judging you, you know. So obviously how you dress, how you appear, your demeanor, all of that's going to have an effect on the person on the other side of the door, okay? Now notice what I think is the most important attribute you need to have as a soul winner. If you're there in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, it says in verse 7, but we were gentle among you, even as a nurse cherisheth her children, so being affectionately desirous of you, we were willing to have imparted unto you not the gospel of God only, but also our own souls, because you were dear unto you. So dear unto us. So he's saying, look, we wanted to impart unto you the gospel of God, and when we did that, we were gentle among you. You know, we weren't abrasive. We weren't jerks. We weren't pushy. We were gentle among you, you know? And I'm not saying, you know, when however you do gentle, that's how you do gentle. Okay, I'm not saying, you know, and I understand some people have better people skills than others. It's not, you know, the most important thing. Basically, you know, the most important thing is to just not be a jerk at the door. Because people are going to pick up on that immediately. They can tell if you want to be there. They can tell if you actually care about them. They can tell if you love them and are genuine in your burden for them. And they, you know, they can do with it what they want. But, you know, one surefire way to put people off is to, you know, just be a jerk at the door. And look, and people do this, you know, and we have all had bad days. I know I've probably gone out there and had a bad attitude, and people have picked up on it, I'm sure. You know, I'm not perfect. Nobody is. But, you know, Paul here said, we were gentle among you, even as a nurse cherisheth her children. So notice, I mean, that's the analogies that he's using as a nursing mother. You know, that's a very, intimate and very gentle thing that a mother does for her child, right? And the kid kind of, you know, the child, anyone who's breastfed knows that that is a very, you can't be pushy with that. You know, the kid kind of determines whether or not they're going to, you know, take what's being offered, okay? But we have to offer it in a very gentle and a very, loving manner. That's how that's the illustration Paul's using, okay? That's what he's using as a nurse. You know, we're offering the sincere milk of the word. We're out there, you know, trying to give them nourishment for their soul. You know, and we need to entreat these people as helpless as they are, like a helpless infant who, you know, really can't find their own way. They have to be led to that which they need, okay? And we can't just go in there and be like a bull in a china shop and expect to get things done, okay? So if you're going to be somebody who's going to win souls, you know, first impressions matter, you know, and we could talk about dress code and all those things. And look, there's something to be said about that. I'm not going to put the priority there. I don't think that's the most important thing. You know, if you go out there with a good spirit and a right attitude, that'll overcome everything else. If you're gentle and you care about these people, you know, those things will all take a back seat, okay? And again, those things are important, but that's not where I'm putting the emphasis. And I used to think more highly of something, those superficial things, you know, and I'm not undervaluing them and not saying they're not important. But the most important thing for us to learn is to be gentle people out there, to actually love the people and to care about them, even as a mother would care about her own child that she's nursing, you know, and to that degree. That's the illustration that Paul is using. And why? He's saying, why were we gentle? Why were we like a mother who, you know, nurses her child? Because you were dear unto us, right? That's really where it comes from. That's the motive. That's how Paul was able to have that right demeanor, because these people were dear unto him. And look, if we go out and to the people that we're going to knock their doors and take the time to go out there, you know, obviously we should be doing it because we care about them. You know, that's probably, you know, why a lot of people don't go soul winning, is because they're not really burdened for the lost. You know, but if we're going to go, let's go with the right spirit. Let's go out there because we care about souls. And we want to, and not go out there to try and build the church. Not to go out there to try to bring people in the church. Like, I'm not against that. I'm all for that. But you know what? Christ is going to build the church. Soul winning is not the end-all, be-all of church growth, okay? There's better ways to bring people into church than knocking their door trying to win them to heaven. We could be doing a lot of other things. That's not the goal here in soul winning, is to build the church. It's to be faithful to the great commission that God has given unto us. And for you to be fruitful as a Christian and to get to that, that place where you become a wise soul winner. And the most important thing, you're never going to get there if people do not become dear unto you. And if you are, you know, and if they're dear unto you, you will be gentle among them. So as far as your demeanor goes, that's really the most important thing. There's a couple other things I'm going to touch on real quick. But you know what? You do you. You do you. That's my recommendation. You say, how should I be when I'm out there? You know, and here's the thing. Different personalities reach different people. And I've preached things in the past where I felt like I've kind of tried to get people all to be kind of the same way at the door. And you know what? That just doesn't work. It's not realistic because of the fact that some people are more introverted than others. And other people are more extroverted than others. You know, I was told recently that I'm an extroverted person, which I guess is true, you know. And then, but other people say, well, I don't know about that. And then I realize, well, yes, I'm extroverted, but I'm also very moody. Okay, so that's the difference there. You know, if I'm hangry, you know, maybe I become less extroverted, right? But, you know, if people are more extroverted than others, some people are more introverted, it's silly to try to get everybody to all be the same way. And the thing about that is, again, is that different people are going to be reached by different personalities. You know, if I'm a very gregarious, very outgoing, very cheerful, very, extroverted person, that might actually put somebody off at the door. You know, some other introvert might come to the door and be like, I don't want to talk to this guy. You know, he's too much, right? He might actually be the guy who's the person, the individual who's more shy, more reluctant, that's going to be more relatable to that person. You know, and God can choreograph things. I believe that. When we're going out in the Spirit and the fullness of the power of God and we're fulfilling the Great Commission, God knows where we're going before we go there. You know, I'm not saying that I spend great hours in prayer about where I'm. I just pick a place, you know, where we're going to go soul winning. God knows we're going to go there. God knows how to get people in that, in engineer circumstances where the person who has that personality that's going to reach that person who's open to the gospel are going to meet. So it's silly for me to get up here and tell people, you know, you must do things exactly this way. You have to have this kind of, be this kind of a person in order to win souls to Christ. It's not true, because the gospel is the power of God unto salvation. Now again, you know, your demeanor is, you do you. Just be yourself out there. And if you're somebody who looks at these people and says they are dear unto me, and you're gentle among them, you know, that's the first and most important impression you can make on anybody when you're out soul winning. You know, there's that famous verse in 1 Corinthians 9. I won't take the time to read the whole thing, but Paul said, to the weak became I as weak, that I might gain the weak. I have made all things to all men, that I might all means save some. You know, Paul was not somebody who was very rigid in his approach to people. You know, was he gentle? What was he? He was endeared unto people. That's the most important personality trait that you have to have to be a soul winner. And that's extrovert, introvert, I don't care what your personality type is, you know, having a burden is universal, okay? So, you know, to this point, and this is where I'm going to kind of go back on some things that I've preached previously, is that, you know, and I feel like I preached almost like sales tactics in the past, you know, where you got to, you know, don't hand them the invite, you know, ask them if they want. Look, I don't care what you do with the invite. You can fold it up like a paper plane and throw it through the window. I don't care. Crumple it up in a ball, throw it on the doorstep, do whatever you want with it, ask them if they want it, you know, and shove it in their hand, stick it in their breast pocket. I don't care what you do with the invite. I don't care. You ask them if they want it, tell them to take it. I don't care, okay? Because in soul winning, sales tactics are not necessary. You know, we're not out there selling vacuums. You know, we're not out there, you know, selling encyclopedias. We're out there preaching the gospel of Christ. You know, we're confronting people about their salvation. So, you know, I don't care how you approach that part of it. And I've preached things like that in the past where it's, you know, you gotta, you know, people don't want to be handed things. And it's you know what I've learned is it's stupid. It doesn't matter. That's not going to make or break somebody getting saved. What's the most important thing is that you're genuine, that you're yourself, and that you are just have a burden for souls. And if you have that, you know, the rest will take care of itself. Because, you know, what I've learned is that, you know, different personalities reach different people. And just because people don't do things exactly the way I do them doesn't mean that they can't be an effective soul winner, because they can. And I'm making a point to park on that, because I've had people, you know, reach out to me and I feel like I've, you know, encouraged that too much in the past. And people have said, oh, that was such a great point. You know, we need to learn to be more people. We have to be people persons when we're out there. No, you don't. Because here's the thing. Some people are not people persons, if you know what I mean. Some people are just not good with people, and they're never going to be. Does that mean they should not go soul winning? Does that mean that they just can't serve God because they're not a people person? No. It just means that they're going to be used differently by God than I am. Because, you know, I feel like that I am a people person, you know, unless I'm hungry, okay? Unless it's been a rough week, you know, unless you made me mad, right? But, you know, typically speaking, you know, that's the way I am. But I can't sit here and insist that everybody be like me, because that's not realistic. Now, I will say, you know, if you're going to be successful as a soul winner, you know, you should, you know, be friendly at the door. You should at least make an effort to not be a jerk. You know, that's really the whole point here. That's the most important thing about when it comes to first impressions. You there and still in Proverbs? Go over to Proverbs chapter number 18. Go to Proverbs chapter 18. The Bible says in Proverbs 15, a merry heart maketh a cheerful countenance, but by sorrow of heart the spirit is broken. You know, if we have a merry heart, if we're enjoying what we're doing, you know, that's going to come across in our soul winning. A merry heart maketh a cheerful countenance. You know, you could tell, you know, a lot of communication is nonverbal, isn't it? You can just look at somebody and you can kind of tell what kind of day that they're having, what kind of mood that they're in. You know, not always, okay? Sometimes if they're doing this, it's because the sun is in their eyes or something like that, okay? I remember saying that to my dad, and I said, man, it just seems like everybody scowls down here. And he lived in the tropics. He says, it's because of the sun. You know, and I was like, oh, okay. But, you know, the truth is that, you know, if you're in a bad mood, it's usually written all over your face. And that's just human nature. You know, and if we're going to go out and be successful at soul winning, you know, and we're going to be wise soul winners, and we're going to win people to the Lord, you know, we could at the very least understand that we need to go with joy in our heart. And look, the more you go soul winning, you know, and this is why I love soul winning. It's almost selfish, because I don't care what else is going on in my life. I don't care what other problems I have going on. When I go soul winning, I forget about them. I remember being, you know, up in Tempe when we're just in the throes of some persecution. There's, you know, infiltrators being exposed. There's just this turmoil within the church, you know, turmoil within your own personal life. You know, one of the best things you can do in that situation is to stop thinking about your own problems and think about somebody else. You know, a great cure for your depression is to go out and actually care about other people. You know, and going out and soul winning, you know, it makes a merry heart. At least it ought to. And if we're joyful about what we're doing, if we enjoy what we're doing, if we understand the magnitude of what we're doing, you know, I believe that that will give us a merry heart. You know, that if we go forth with weeping, we will no doubt return again with rejoicing, bringing our sheaves with us, the Bible says. But you're going to need to go with the, you know, that merry heart will give you a cheerful countenance. And I think that's important. You know, people will pick up on the countenance. Look at Proverbs 18, verse 24. A man that hath friends must show himself friendly. You know, you want, I don't have any friends. Well, how friendly are you? Are you a friendly person? You know, no one wants to be friends with a rude jerk. No one wants to be friends with people who are just always mean and nasty, right? No one wants to be friends with the bitter shut-in. You know, no one wants to be friends with just a brawling, mean, nasty person. You know, apply that to your soul winning. You know, I'm not saying you have to go out there and be Mr. Personality. You have to be the most charming person in the world. But, you know, what you could do is when you knock on that door and they open it, you could be smiling. You know, you could even fake it. And you'd find that it was, I'm faking it right now. This is fake. This isn't even a real smile. But can you tell? Can you? Look how many other people are smiling right now just because I'm faking it. Right? Do this, now it's real. Okay. Because you started smiling. Now I'm smiling. Right? See how the countenance affects our relationship? So go do that when you're soul winning. You know, when someone comes to the door, just... Nah. Ever from Faithful Word. Do you want this? All right. You know, and nobody does that extreme, obviously. But, you know, if we're just very sullen all of the time, and again, you do you, okay? Whatever degree friendliness is to you, go ahead and do that. But be friendly. You know, smile a little bit when you're out there. Say hi, you know. Hi, how you doing? You know, I like to say, how are you? And it's really great when they ask me, they say, fine, how are you? I say, great, thank you. Because I genuinely appreciate when people ask how I'm doing. A total stranger is asking how I'm doing. They're not just like, fine, what do you want? You get that too, right? So let me talk, you know, getting into door knocking. And I know, again, this is very practical, just down-to-earth stuff when it comes to going out and learning how to go soul winning. But these are the things that matter. Okay? And it's not, I don't think it's as elaborate and as complicated as people need to sometimes make it, and as I have made it, honestly, in the past. You know, when it comes to the first impression, just be friendly. Just be yourself. You know, and that you'll have an easier time doing that if you actually have a burden for people, if you actually are endeared unto to lost souls. You know, if you're lacking that, if you're just totally unmotivated, if you've just completely tuned me out and you just think this is a total waste of your time to be here this morning, you need to go home and search your heart. You need to go home and ask yourself why you're even on this earth. And if you just have no interest in winning souls, you know what? You need to go home and pray to God and ask Him to give you a burden for the lost. You know, because you were that person. Any one of you could have been somebody that's out. We could be knocking your door this afternoon. And you could just be some lost sinner on your way to hell. Okay? So, if you don't have the burden, you know, that's the most important thing. Get the burden, okay? And the rest will follow. At the door, first impressions matter. Do yourself. Sales tactics are not necessary. Let me just talk about the actual knocking of the door. So these are the very practical steps, okay? Because first of all, you're going to show up at the soul winning time. You're going to get in the van. We're going to drive to where we're going. You're going to get out of the van, right? We'll have a word of prayer. You're going to partner up. Then we're going to start walking. We're going to go right foot, left foot, right foot, left foot. We're going to walk up to the door, and then we're going to knock the door. Very practical sermon this morning. And let's talk about how and when to knock. There's hows and whens to knock. Okay, first of all, let's cover how to knock. Let's talk about how. Let me go down the list here. That way I don't lose my place. Let's start with the when. Okay, doors, we're knocking every door. Now, there are some doors we will not knock. They're very rare, okay? And this is my policy. You do whatever you want. You know, I'll deal with the phone calls and the emails myself. That's fine. I'll apologize for you. But my policy, personally, and I've learned this from others, is do not knock doors where they have a sign that says day sleeper. You know, people that work third shift, if you're there, you know, like, maybe that's what that guy was. Remember that guy that cussed me out in Spanish? He was mad. I mean, it was Sunday afternoon at 2:00 PM, and I'm getting, you know, I'm learning Spanish, and I'm like, you know, giving my intro in Spanish, and he starts saying some Spanish back to me, and I'm like, I'm all happy, like, I'm speaking the Spanish, you know, we're having a communication. Then Brother Adam informed me that he was talking about my mother and not in a good way, you know, and his objection was is that he had to work. You know, and I don't know that he was a night shift guy. I think he was just cantankerous. But, you know, if you knock on the door where it says, do not knock, day sleeper, you know, where they've taken the time to buy blackout shades, you know, you're knocking at their midnight. You know, don't be surprised when they come to the door and are just like, can't you read? You know, that's why I don't knock, because that's not going to go well. It's just not. It's just, you know, I'm going to respect that person. It's just they're not, they're going to think, oh, Christians are just jerks. Well, what about their soul? What about their... Well, you know, God has other means. You know, I'm not going to worry about it too much. God can, you know, lead us to that person. They can find the gospel. If they sincerely want to hear the truth, you know, maybe they'll be awake that day. You know, maybe God will wake them up when they know. I don't know. Maybe they'll be out in their front yard getting the mail. I don't know. But that's my policy. And look, if you're more spiritual than me and you're willing to do that, go ahead and have fun with that. Let me know how it goes. Another door I don't knock is where it says baby sleeping. Baby sleeping. Okay. And once you have children, you can appreciate this much more. You know, if you have a colicky child that you have to, it's like all day just to get that child to be quiet. And when parents know, you know, anyone who's had small children knows how to, like, you creep out of the bedroom like a ninja. Because you don't want to wake the child up. You get him, you lay him down in their sleep, and then you kind of slither out of bed. I've literally crawled out of the room on hands and knees, okay, to not wake the child. You know, and you go through all this hard work to get the child to sleep and not wake them up, and then some guy comes along from a Baptist church. She goes, oh, you come to the screaming child. Oh, can I help you? That's not how that conversation's going to go. It's going to be like, you jerk. You know, she's going to handle you the bottle and go for a walk. You know, you put him back to sleep. So those are two doors. And that's just my own personal policy. You do whatever you want. I do knock No soliciting signs. People have asked me this. What do we do when they say no soliciting? Knock them anyway. Okay, now let me just say, you know, a few things about that. If you knock a no soliciting sign, just be prepared to move on. It can also be some of the most entertaining doors you knock. Okay, I like the no soliciting because you just never know what you're going to get, what that door opens up. And look, I've gotten people saved that have no soliciting signs. Look, no soliciting signs are like addresses anymore. And here's the thing. People move into houses that have no soliciting signs and they don't even think about it. It's just there. You know, it was the last guy. And look, if you knock a no soliciting sign, that's not the time to be a smart aleck either. And I have to rein this in. You know, I've always wanted to have the wise line. You know, well, don't you get a sign that says I hate God? Huh? It's probably not the time and place for that. You're already kind of treading on dangerous ground a little bit. You're already kind of pushing the limit. And people will say, can't you read? Can't you read the sign? And I've had them come out and point at it and not say anything. And just go, can't you read the sign? And I've been tempted to say, oh, I don't smoke. You know, or I can't read. You always want to have that sharp comeback. That's not the time or the place. Okay. If you knock the no soliciting sign, just be prepared to move on and move on quickly. And people just say, hey, read the sign. Just, all right, have a good day. And I just leave. Look, when people are dismissive towards me and want to run me off quickly, I'm glad. I'd rather have somebody do that than sit there and waste my time and just want to chit-chat and talk about the weather or just lead me on and just think I'm there to just make conversation. I'm there to preach them the gospel. You know, and if they're not ready to hear and to learn, then I want to move on. So really, people that reject you quickly are doing you a favor. So don't take it too personally. Don't be a smart aleck either, because again, we're there to win souls, right? We're not there to blow off steam. You know, we're not there to knock the no soliciting sign and get some God haters like, all right, finally. You know, this isn't the internet, all right? Go do that stuff on the internet. You know, go run your mouth on the internet, okay? We're not there to make ourselves into something. I don't know where I had you go last, but if you would, go to 1 Timothy chapter 4. I'm going to be done here in just a few minutes. I'm just making some real practical points this morning about going soul winning. You know, what was the first point? You need to go. You know, you want to learn how to go soul winning, go soul winning. You know, if you don't get anything else this morning, please get that. You know, pick a time, stay committed, take notes, be a silent partner, practice, you know, and we'll get into the verses tonight, you know, and I'll walk you through how to give the gospel, and, you know, you can use that. And then, you know, what was the other point? Your demeanor, how you conduct yourself at the door, starting from the when you knock to where that door opens. You know, and if you have a burden for people, I don't care what your personality type is. I don't care what your methods are. If you have a burden, if you're endeared to people, if they're dear unto you and you're gentle towards them, you will see success. Okay? And I don't, regardless of what tactics you want to use or don't use. But again, we're talking about the door knocking, okay? So the actual knocking of the door. And you say, well, that sounds like a real, you got to teach us how to knock the door. Yes, because some people don't know how to knock a door when they're out soul winning. You think they're there to preach the gospel. You wonder, are you here to preach the gospel or serve a search warrant? Because the way you knock, I think the people in there are thinking they're about to get raided. Like, I'm wondering, did you bring a battering ram with you? You know, we didn't. I know we came in a van, but it wasn't a SWAT truck, okay? And people knock like this. It's just a. Like, that's not a good way to knock the door. It hurts my hand just to do that. I don't know why anybody would want to knock the door like that. You know, I like to use my hand. If you want to be one of those people that uses your Bible, you know, that's a pet peeve of mine, but you do whatever you want. You know, I got that off my chest. But, you know, here's some real good practical tips on the actual physical aspect of knocking the door. You know, everyone here has those security doors, the steel doors, and when you knock it, it just goes, it's really loud and annoying. You know, if you knock the hinge side of the door, it won't do that because that's the part that's fastened to the frame, whereas this is the side that is, you know, opens and closes. It's real loose. So when you're knocking this side, it's just bouncing. If you knock the hinge side of the door or the wood frame next to the door, it'll be heard, it'll resonate, and it's not that loud, abrasive, you know, like your kid's friend trying to come in and steal a push pop or something. I don't know. Like, it's not a kid knock. You know, it's a, and look, you know, it doesn't have to, just however you want to knock. I just like a 1, 2, 3. That's pretty good. You know, some people get into these, they act like they got like a rhythm going on. They're like, you know, and whatever. Now, I've heard in some countries that's actually a very obscene thing to knock. I don't know much about it, but people have said that thing, dun, 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 dun. I think it's in the Philippines or somewhere. I don't know, but that's actually an obscenity in some way. You ask me how, I don't know, but people have told me that. So I avoid that knock. You know, I don't try to get these clever little, you know, just, is it that hard? You know, just knock, natural knock. Knock whoever you want. You know, knock yourself out. Have fun out there, all right, with your knock. But just don't cop knock, all right? Don't be one of these Baptists. Open up. Go to heaven. We're going to take it to heaven. Right? Don't be that guy either, all right? You say it's real practical. Yeah, but this is the things people do. You know, some people haven't been taught very basic manners on how to conduct themselves. You know, you're on somebody else's property. You're on somebody else's time. Look, if someone came to my door, I don't care what they're doing. They knock like that. It's going to be a very unchristian moment for me. You know, it's going to be hard to kind of be like, oh, man. So don't cop knock. And here's another point on this is remember that today, especially, there are cameras and microphones everywhere. You know, someone should have told those Mormons. I don't know if you ever saw that video from the doorbell video of the Mormons reciting their pickup lines. It's pretty funny. I'm not going to go into it. But it's these two Mormon, you know, elders. You know, they probably just learned how to drive a car. But they're there, you know, talking. They're at someone's doorbell camera, and it's this viral YouTube video of them, like, reciting, you know, all the pickup lines they're going to recite to the chicks at Brigham Young University. You know, it's quite humorous. But, you know, it makes the point that, you know, if you're there and there's a doorbell, and I've installed those doorbells. I used to have a job, you know, where that was part of my duties, was to sell and install those doorbells. Those things turn on without you touching it. That's a setting. It has a motion sensor. So when you walk up there and you're just, like, berating their lawn decorations, You're critiquing the color of their house. You're talking trash about their neighbor who was a bit of a jerk next door. Like, they're hearing all that, potentially. Okay, so, you know, and this leads me to another point. You know, is that when people have a bad experience at the door, you know, at least wait till you get out of earshot before you start talking about the person if you feel the need. Okay. I mean, I've been with people, they're like, we're not even at the end of the driveway, and be like, that guy's a jerk, huh? You know, it's like, dude, he's right there. Like, yes, he was, but it's like, you're not helping things. Okay? So, I like to just forget about the bad doors as quick as I can. You know, which is a shame, because a lot of them make for great stories. But, you know, I try to not, you know, I try to shake the dust off my feet immediately, you know, figuratively speaking, so I can have a right attitude to the next door. I don't like to dwell on bad people. And that's easier said than done. Okay? You know, when you got the jerk who's like, well, I don't worship Jews and books that they write, you know, that's still stuck with me, right? And you want to just let them have it, you know. Let them have it, but not in front of them, not where he can hear you. And not where their neighbor can hear you through their door camera or whatever they got. Those things are everywhere. Look, and here's the thing. Let me just prepare you for it. When you go out soul winning, this is why people, I think, don't go soul winning, is because they're afraid of rejection. But, you know, the worst they're going to do is call you a nasty name, and that's very rare. I don't think, I don't know that I've ever been called a name. I mean, what's the worst they're going to do to you? Slam a door, laugh, say no thank you. It's not that big a deal. It's not like they're going to nail you to a cross for what you're trying to preach. You know, that's what they did to Jesus, okay? So be prepared for rejection. I don't know where I had you turn, but the Bible says in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 10, "For therefore we both labor and suffer reproach, because we trust in living God." He told Timothy, look, we labor and we suffer reproach because we trust in living God. That's part of laboring for the Lord. You know, is suffering reproach. That's just, it just, you know, I'm not going to preach the whole sermon about that right now, but that's a whole other sermon. Part of the Christian life is suffering reproach. People do not love the Bible. You know, we go east of here and we get into the neighborhoods around ASU. It's not exactly the most, you know, Bible-friendly territory. You know, but we're still going to go, okay? Because we labor and we suffer reproach, because, you know, there are people over there that will get saved, okay? Or at least be prompted to think about spiritual things and maybe get saved later. We might be just watering the seed. We might just be planting the seed. It's important that we go. It's important to understand that when you are going to trust in living God, you're going to labor and suffer reproach. One comes with the other. Why? Because we trust in living God, who is the Savior of all men. You know, we labor, we go out there, we go on the hot days, we go out and we inconvenience ourselves, we get uncomfortable, and we suffer reproach because Christ is the Savior of all men. To everybody that believeth. To the Jew first and also to the Greek. He's the Savior of all men. So I'm willing to go to every neighborhood and suffer whatever reproach I have to suffer there if there's someone that's going to get saved. So don't let that keep you away from soul winning, because because then you're never going to go. If you're just afraid to suffer a little reproach for Christ's sake, then you'll never go soul winning. If you're afraid of what somebody's going to say at the door, then you'll never go soul winning. Don't let fear stop you from, you know, being a fruitful soul winner and having the joy that comes with winning souls. You know, the people that are some of the most joyful, happy, content Christians are the ones that go soul winning and win souls to Christ. I mean, there's a lot of things that are, you know, very, you know, my best days of my life, you know, the day you got saved, the day you got married, the day your children were born. You know, these are real big days for us, you know. But when the day you win your first soul to Christ, I mean, don't take this wrong. I'm not trying to be braggadocious here. I've done a lot of soul winning. I've been able to do that, praise God. And I've seen a lot of people get saved. But I still remember the first person I ever preached the gospel to and prayed and got saved. And honestly, I've forgotten about a lot of other people. But that first one, I can remember. To this day, I remember the living room. Her name was Amber. You know, I remember, you know, preaching the whole thing. I remember that day very clearly, because that was a very high day for me. Because why? Because I spent a lot of time learning how to go soul winning. I went soul winning as a silent partner for months. I marked my Bible. I listened to sermons. I practiced. I prayed. And then I went, and that was a very, you know, joyful day for me. I was probably more happy about that person's salvation than they were, you know. So let me close these practical points up. I know I'm going long, but I got to get this out there, because we have people that need to learn these things in our church. You know, we could just take a whole Saturday and I could guilt trip everybody to show up on a Saturday, you know, and have a seminar and try to bribe you with food, but let's just knock it out right now. So when you're at the door, knock like a normal person, you know, who's not there to drag somebody off to jail. And when they come to the door, identify yourself quickly, okay? Identify yourself quickly. Don't put it on them. You remember, you knocked their door. And they say hello, just say, hi, my name is so-and-so. I'm from Faithful Word Baptist Church. And I like to include that information, because when they see you there and you're like this, they're thinking, great, another Mormon. Great, another Jehovah Witness. You're probably the only Baptist that's ever going to come to their door, unfortunately. You know, we don't have the reputation as God's people who actually have the truth as the ones that go door to door. Now, we're trying to change that here with our church. You know, that's what's known about our church. But generally speaking, that's not what Baptists are known for anymore. It's the JWs and the Mormons that are known for that. That's why I say, hi, my name's Corbin. I'm from a Baptist church. You know, and a lot of times those no soliciting signs, those are up because of the Mormons and the JWs and the solar guy. And the air, the water quality guy, you know. But when they hear Baptist church, they go, okay, this is different. So that's why I try to say right now, hey, hello, my name is Corbin. I'm from Faithful Word Baptist Church. And I'll get more into the intro tonight. I just want to touch on that. Tell them why you are there. Identify yourself and say, hey, we're just going around the church handing out invitations to church. Okay? And I like to say that because that's true. You know, you don't need to be one of these pedantic, you know, people who have to include, and we're preaching the gospel. If you want to say that, go ahead. But you know, the people just go to extremes and say, well, should you tell them that we're there preaching the gospel too? Well, I guess you can if you want, but it's, you know, I'm just trying to get it out quick, and I'm just saying, look, we're handing out invitations to church. Can I give you one? Is that a false statement? Am I lying? Am I misleading people? But no, because I am inviting people to church. Am I preaching the gospel too? Yeah, but I'm doing both. So I'm just trying to let them know why I'm there, who I am, and why I'm there as quick as I can. Okay, so I'm either trying to get to the point where they're going to listen or reject me. I'm trying to get to that point as fast as I can so I can go on to the next door or get them saved. Okay, so I don't need to, my name is Corbin John Russell II. I'm from Faithful Word Baptist Church at 1955 West Grant Road in Tucson, Arizona. We're approximately 2.5 miles from you, 10 minutes in light traffic. You know, I'm not trying to give them all this information, right? And I'm preaching the unsearchable riches of the gospel of Christ today. If you are willing and ready and able to receive the truth of the gospel, is that you, sir? Now, is all that true? Yeah, but is that all relevant to the situation at hand when I'm knocking their door? No, what's relevant is they know who I am and why I'm there. Okay, and I'm just trying to get to, as quick as I can, to either being accepted or rejected. Okay, hi, my name is Corbin from Faithful Word Baptist Church. I'm just handing out these invitations. Would you like one? Can I give you one? Or you don't even have to say that. You can just hold it out there with a blank stare in your face. I don't care. Honestly, I don't care. Do whatever you want. Tell them why you're there. You're handing out invites. And you don't need to be pedantic or over-detailed about all that stuff. And hand them the invite however you want. Now, let me just close on a few safety points. Okay? Because these are things that we often overlook. And even amongst us who are more seasoned and have been at this, we tend to forget about these things. And I know because Brother Gabriel and I were almost attacked by a dog the other day. It's a very close call, okay? The Bible says in Ecclesiastes 4, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. So look, it's better to have two because you'll have a guy looking out for you. You know, and that's important, not soul winning. That's why I never want to see people go alone. It makes me nervous when I see people go alone. Some of the worst experiences that we have soul winning, and it's usually because the person that's going alone is not being held accountable like they should be for their behavior at the door. Some of the most upset emails that we get and voicemails are from people who go alone and don't have any. And look, you know, that's another reason to not go alone. You could be falsely accused of things, okay? But another thing is that, you know, if you have somebody with you, you have somebody looking out for you, watching your back. At least that's what they should be doing and not this. Oh, yeah, go knock that door. I'll be right here on Facebook. Look, when you're out and it's not your turn to talk, you're the sign-up partner, whatever, your job should be, you should have your head on a swivel. You should be looking around, taking in your surroundings, and on the lookout. And here's a real practical way to do this, is that we run into this a lot, especially in the poor communities where they have a lot of gates, right? Because they're protecting their homes. And a lot of times within those gates, they'll have dogs of all different breeds and sizes and multitudes sometimes, okay? So when you go to a gate, what we've developed, and we kind of did this instinctively, you know, after a few close calls, is that the one guy, you know, the silent partner kind of stands at the gate, you know, with his hand on the gate, ready to, you know, to, one, not let dogs, little dogs get out, or two, to swing that thing open so the other guy can come running out the gate and slam it behind him before, you know, he gets turned into a lunch for some pit bull. And we've had some close calls. And let me just say this. You know, this is another thing Brother Adam and I learned the hard way is don't cry wolf when you're out there. Because it got real fun for me and him to see the other one jump and run and be like, oh, just kidding. Until one day it's going to actually, and then we both did that to each other a couple times. And said, you know what, we need to quit doing that. And it's a good thing we did because we went and knocked the door and I'm telling them, oh, it's fine. You know, it looked like there was a dog there, but the dog sign, if you will, was very small in nature. You know, bigger dogs make a bigger sign, if you know what I'm saying. And I'm saying, you know, they're little, you know, they're little dog sign, scat, whatever you want to call it, right? And I'm thinking, you'll be fine. And so we both just go in there and I didn't stay by the gate and he's knocking the door and we turn and like this giant Cujo-looking St. Bernard just comes around, and he was not friendly. And that was very hairy moment. So I always emphasize that when we're preaching about soul winning. Say, how are you going to keep each other safe? You know, dogs are probably the most primary things to look out for when you're soul winning. So if you're the silent partner, you know, unless it's, you know, open or something, if there's a gate and there's, you know, rattle the gate before you even go in. Do the You know, get the dog to come if you can. And they don't always respond to that. I found that out last Thursday. You know, we went in, I rattled the gate, and we were both deep into the yard. There was a little chihuahua, and then just out of the corner of my eye behind a vehicle, I saw big, not hooves, but big paws moving and a tail. And I said, hey, hey, hey. And we both started walking, but he was already there. And thankfully, it was not an aggressive breed. Otherwise, I had to pull out my 9, you know, but I don't want to do that. You know, I don't want to shoot somebody's dog in their yard. I really don't, okay? And I'm going to close on firearms here in a second. But, you know, so, you know, when you get to the gate, rattle the gate, you know, try to get the dog's attention before you even go in. If you're still not sure, have your partner stand at the gate watching. Because, you know, when you're at the door, your peripheral is at the door. You can't see the sides and everything, and the dog is sneaking up on you, you know, it's stalking you. You know, your soul winning partner should be looking out for that. Say, hey, dog, you know, and mean it, don't mess around. And then just run, and the other guy's just ready to slam the gate as soon as you get through. Okay? It's real practical instruction this morning. Here's another one, and this is probably pretty common sense. Never go into a home alone, ever. I don't care how big and bad you are. I don't care if you're the biggest guy in the church. Never go into a home alone. You know, you shouldn't be. First of all, I prefer that you do not go soul winning alone to begin with. Okay, but if you are in that situation, and I don't know why you are, you know, never leave your soul winning partner unattended ever under any circumstance. And people do this. You know, their partner will start preaching the gospel, and they'll just like, well, I'm just going to go knock the next door. Wrong. Stay with that person. People have, you know, I've had ladies do this to my wife. And I don't know if you noticed about my wife, but she's not the most intimidating figure. You know, she's not exactly, you know, a physical threat to many people. You know, she's somebody that, you know, could be taken advantage of physically. And I don't appreciate her being left alone. Okay? And I don't care who you are. I don't appreciate anybody being left alone. Because people can pull things out of their pockets. Other people could show up. Never leave people alone. Never go into home alone, ever. Another thing for the person who is the silent partner is distractions, okay? You know, if there is a little yippy dog that you're kind of dealing with, maybe you could pet the dog. If somebody else pulls up, maybe, you know, someone's preaching the gospel to somebody at the house, and then another car pulls up in the driveway and people are getting out. And, you know, maybe it's the parent or something like that. They're kind of like, who are these people? You know, the silent partner at that point could just go over, hey, we're from a Baptist church. We're just preaching the gospel. You know, just, you know, briefly let them know who you are and why you're there. So they're not thinking, oh, great, they're there. You know, we don't want solar. We're not interested in a vacuum. They think that you're a salesperson or something. Or that you're a Mormon and they're tired of the Mormon. Whatever, okay? So distractions. Real quickly, and firearms, and I'm walking lightly here because I understand that, you know, I'm all for the Second Amendment. I'm all for firearms. My personal preference, and I'm not going to enforce this. I'm not going to tell you what to do out soul winning. But my personal preference, and I'm not going to say anything. I'm saying it now so I don't have to say it later. You know, if I'm saying it, if you choose to go against me on this, I'm not going to be mad. Whatever, I get it. People have their rights. Exercise them. When it comes to firearms, I prefer that you do not open carry. You know, honestly, I prefer that that's not even done in the church, but whatever. Do whatever you want. You know, I prefer concealed carry, you know, because it does, believe it or not, everybody's pro-Second Amendment. Not everybody in this world is pro-gun. That's probably not news to any of us, right? So it'd be real shame if you had somebody who might listen to the gospel or be open to the gospel, but they're going to reject you because, you know, you have a, you know, you've got a Smith & Wesson 44 Magnum strapped to your hip or something like that. You know, you got the full-size Glock 17 out there for everybody to see. You know, they make subcompacts for a reason. You can stay safe. You know, and also in firearms, you know, this is getting into another thing, and I know I got to close, is that if you're going to carry a firearm, you know, this is what I was told. I worked at a job where my boss was encouraged his employees to carry firearms, but his rule was you leave your temper at home or your gun. You don't bring both to work. You know, same thing with soul winning. If you're somebody who cannot control your temper, that is going to just pull, you know, has an itchy trigger finger, and it's going to pull that thing out under the slightest threat, you should probably not carry a gun at all, period. Okay? No, it's true. You know, because people, and I know I got to close, but people think that they can, you know, I've known people that carry guns that probably just shouldn't. Because they just think they, you know, they can plug anybody for practically any reason. You know, I felt threatened. It's like, well, that's not where it's going to end. There will be an investigation. You will be booked. You will go to jail. You know, unless there's just overwhelming evidence on your side, you know, you're probably going to end up going to court. And 80% of people in justified shootings end up divorced and bankrupt. So keep that in mind before you pull your firearm out on somebody. And never pull a firearm unless you're intending to use it, which should be an extreme last resort, okay? So I do want to touch on that, you know, because that's important. And again, my preference, it's not the policy here, it's my preference is that you conceal carry when you're out soul winning. And really, you know, I think it's just tactically better to just conceal carry at all times. You know, if I'm a masked shooter, the guy with the gun in his hip is the one that's getting it first, okay? The one that, oh, you're armed? Okay, I'll shoot you first, and then I'll move on to everybody else. So maybe you should, you know what, actually, no, go ahead and open carry. Keep me safe. While you're getting filled with lead, I'll be pulling it out, okay? So, but don't worry, I'll say nice things at your funeral. So anyway, hopefully this was helpful this morning. I know this isn't, you know, the most exciting sermon, but you know what, soul winning is exciting. And those of us that do it, that have taken the time to do these things and go out there and win souls, you know, you get the fellowship with the other believers, you get the experiences, you get cool stories, you have a near-death experience with a large dog, you know, that always gets the adrenaline going. You know, and, you know, if you have these things down, if you have a good countenance, if you have a burden for the lost, if you're going out there at the right motives, and you're prepared to preach the gospel, on top of all that, you will win souls to Christ for all eternity. You know, I don't know that there's anything more exciting than that. I'm not saying every soul-winning session is, you know, a trip to Disneyland or something like that. But, not, anyway. But, you know, it is rewarding, okay? And it's worth preparing for, you know, and it'll bring you great joy and it'll get souls saved. So that's just part one. These are the real practical points this morning. Just a few practical points about preparing, how to behave at the door, what to look out for, how to stay safe. You know, hopefully you're taking notes. This will be, if you ever need to refer back to this sermon, it will be online. You know, it's on our YouTube. Like, share, subscribe. And this evening, I will be going over the gospel itself, you know, verse by verse, giving a very basic gospel outline. So again, that'll be online. I know not everybody can make it back for the evening service. I understand that, okay? But that's going to do it. Let's go ahead and close in a word of prayer. Dear Lord,